the monster. He was an undersized little man, with a head too big for his body. A sickly little man. His nerves were bad. He had skin trouble. It was agony for him to wear anything next to his skin coarser than silk. And he had delusions of grandeur. He was a monster of conceit. Never for one minute did he look at the world or at people, except in relation to himself. He was not only the most important person in the world, to himself. In his own eyes, he was the only person who existed. He believed himself to be one of the greatest dramatists in the world, one of the greatest thinkers, and one of the greatest composers. To hear him talk, he was Shakespeare, and Beethoven, and Plato rolled into one. And you would have had no difficulty in hearing him talk. He was one of the most exhausting conversationists that ever lived. An evening with him was an evening spent in listening to a monologue. Sometimes he was brilliant. Sometimes he was maddeningly tiresome. But whether he was being brilliant or dull, he had one sole topic of conversation. Himself. What he thought and what he did. He had a mania for being in the right. The slightest hint of disagreement from anyone on the most trivial point was enough to set him off on a harangue that might last for hours, in which he proved himself right in so many ways and with such exhausting volubility that in the end his hearer, stunned and deafened, would agree with him for the sake of peace. It never occurred to him that he and his doing were not of the most intense and fascinating interest to anyone with whom he came in contact. He has theories about almost any subject under the sun, including the drama, politics, and music, and in support of these theories he wrote pamphlets, letters, books, thousands upon thousands of words, hundreds and hundreds of pages. He not only wrote these things and published them, usually at somebody else's expense, but he would sit and read them aloud for hours to his friends and his family. He had the emotional stability of a six-year-old child. When he felt out of sorts, he would rave and stomp, or sink into suicidal gloom, and talk darkly of going to the East to end his days as a Buddhist monk. 10 minutes later, when something pleased him, he would rush out of doors and run around the garden, or jump up and down on the sofa, or stand on his head. He could be grief-stricken over the death of a pet dog, and he could be callous and heartless to a degree that would have made a Roman emperor shudder. He was almost innocent of any sense of responsibility. Not only did he seem incapable of supporting himself, but it never occurred to him that he was under any obligation to do so. He was convinced that the world owed him a living. In support of this belief, he borrowed money from everybody who was good for a loan, men, women, friends, or strangers. He wrote begging letters by the score, sometimes groveling without shame. I have found no record of his ever paying or repaying money to anyone who did not have a legal claim upon it. He was equally unscrupulous in other ways. An endless procession of women marched through his life. His first wife spent 20 years enduring and forgiving his infidelities. His second wife had been the wife of his most devoted friend and admirer, from whom he stole her. And even while he was trying to persuade her to leave her first husband, he was writing to a friend to inquire whether he could suggest some wealthy woman, any wealthy woman, whom he could marry for her money. He was completely selfish in his other personal relationships. His liking for his friends was measured solely by the completeness of their devotion to him, or by their usefulness to him, whether financial or artistic. The minute they failed him, even by so much as refusing a dinner invitation, or began to lessen in usefulness, he cast them off without a second thought. At the end of his life, he had exactly one friend left whom he had known even in middle age. The name of this monster was Richard Wagner. Everything that I have said about him you can find on record, in newspapers, in police reports, in the testimony of people who knew him, in his own letter, between the lines of his autobiography. And the curious thing about this record is that it doesn't matter in the least. Because this undersized, sickly, disagreeable, fascinating little man was right all the time. The joke was on us. He was one of the world's greatest dramatists. He was a great thinker. He was one of the most stupendous musical geniuses that, up to now, the world has ever seen. The world did owe him a living. What if he was faithless to his friends and to his wives? He had one mistress to whom he was faithful to the day of his death: music. Not for a single moment did he ever compromise with what he believed, with what he dreamed. There is not a line of his music that could have been conceived by a little mind. Even when he is dull or downright bad, he is dull in the grand manner. There is greatness about his worst mistakes. Listening to his music, one does not forgive him for what he may or may not have been. It is not a matter of forgiveness. It is a matter of being dumb with wonder that his poor brain and body didn't burst under the torment of the demon of creative energy that lived inside him, struggling, crawling, scratching to be released, tearing, shrieking at him to write the music that was in him. The miracle is that what he did in the little space of 70 years could have been done at all, even by a great genius. Is it any wonder that he had no time to be a man?